Hi, this is Vikas Dubey. We are part of Faculty of Social Science. Now we are going to study about Act 3rd of Loyalties. Scene first. This act begins 3 months after the events described in the last scene. Dancy has filed a defamation suit against DeLevis. His solicitors are Twisden and Gravitter, and his counsel is Sir Frederick. The case has made considerable progress and is being followed with tremendous interest by the general public. The Jews are all sympathizing with DeLevis, but the general public wants Dancy to win. The scene is led in the office of Twisden and Gravitter, solicitors in Lincoln Inn Fields, London. It is afternoon. The junior partner, Mr. Gravitter, is in the office. Twisden is in the courts, busy with the case of Dancy versus DeLevis. Mr. Gilman, head of a firm of grocers, is announced. He says that he has come on very important business, which he will discuss only with an experienced lawyer like Mr. Twisden. He talks to Gravitter in a leisurely manner about other matters. He talks about his business. He talks of Mr. Twisden's high reputation as a lawyer. He says that he has heard that Mr. Twisden refused a knighthood because he is expecting to be made a baron. He talks of the keen interest taken by the press and the public in the case of Dancy versus DeLevis. Gravitter is soon bored by his talk. He is a busy man and he has no time to spend on gossip with a stranger who will not disclose his real business. He is asked to wait for Mr. Twisden in afternoon in another room. Windsor Hare and Margaret arrive and they inform Gravitter that the witness of DeLevis has been examined. Sir Frederick was on the top of his form. Windsor informs Gravitter that General Canning had been summoned by the court to give evidence. The numbers of two of the stolen notes have been printed in the evening papers. Windsor says that this case has caused as much sensation in England as the Dreyfus case had caused in France. All of you are supporting DeLevis without going into the merits of the case. Margaret does not like the presence of two Jews on the jury. She feels that they should have objected to their inclusion. She is, however, silenced when Gravitter says that in that case DeLevis might have challenged the other 10 who are Christians. Jacob Twisden now comes in. He is an old man of 68 and everything about him seems to be narrow. He is dedicated to profession and he has no interest in life except law. Windsor informs him that the general in the course of his evidence may have mentioned the fact of the said. Wet mention the fact of the wet sleeve and that may go against Dancy. They know that the general is a truthful man and if he is asked about it he would speak the truth. So Dancy should be told to be ready with his explanation. Windsor and Margaret would go together and tell him, but Mrs. Dancy must not know about it. Twisden now starts suspecting that Dancy is the thief and he gets upset. Windsor and Margaret leave. Twisden now calls Gilman the grocer. He says that he has come from a sense of duty. He has been following the Dancy case and at half past two that afternoon he read in the evening paper the number of the stolen notes. He remembered having given change for a £50 note. So he went to his cash box to make sure that that was not a stolen note. It was. He remembered that he had given change for it to Mr. Ricardo's, an Italian wine seller, who was one of his oldest customers. He was taken aback. He said that he was an honorable man, but he could not say where he got the note from. Gilman told him that he was going to Mr. Twisden, who had the Dancy case in hand. He agreed to come with him and was sitting in the cab outside. On the way, he tried to get something out of him, but he started talking of his Sicilian claret. Gilman says that he would be glad if the discovery of this note helps Dancy to win the case. He does not like Zeus, chiefly because they are very good in organizing business and they prosper well in it. Well, I prefer my own countrymen, and that is the truth of it. He was against the Jews because of his loyalties to the Christian and because the Jews are successfully rivals in his trade. Ricardo is now called in. He is an Italian looking man and he looks anxious. When he is asked how that note came into his possession, he says that he would like to explain everything in private. Mr. Tuesday now gives Mr. Gilman £50 for his note and tells him that he has done his duty well. He advises him not to speak about it to anyone and then bids him adieu. Now Tuesday and Gravitter examine Ricardo's about the recovery of the stolen note from him. At first, Ricardo does not want to explain anything. Tuesday tells him that it will be his duty to inform the Bank of England that the stolen note has been traced to him and he will have to explain to them how he came in possession of it. Ricardo is now cornered. He says that it is a painful thing for him because it concerns the good name of his daughter. The money was given to him in settlement of a debt of honor and he did not know where from that gentleman got the money. He gave Mr. Twisden the £100 note, also the number of which had appeared in the papers. Gravitter asked him how much the gentleman had paid him in all. Ricardo told him that it was £1,000 and the money was paid in the middle of October. Twisden then suddenly asked him, was it Captain Dancy? Ricardo hesitated and wanted to be assured that his daughter will not hear about it. Then he said that it was Dancy. He admitted that he had blackmailed Dancy. He had threatened to tell his wife if he did not pay the money. Then he had paid the money and Ricardo's had invested all money except £100 in her name. Mr. Tuesday kept the notes and let him go, asking Gravitter to take his address. Tuesday was now certain that Dancy was the thief. He therefore decided that he could not go on with the case. He wanted to inform Sir Frederick, who was conducting the case in court, about the latest developments as early as possible. He had his loyalty to his profession. Gravitter has some sympathy for Dancy, who came to them in confidence. He has very great sympathy for poor Mrs. Dancy. He says that they alone know about Dancy's guilt. Ricardo and Gilman won't talk. So if money is paid to De Levis, the case can be closed. But Tuesday did not agree. His loyalty to his profession was more important than his loyalty to his client. Gravitter did not like the idea of losing the case and admitting that they had bagged a wrong person. But Tuesday insisted that they must withdraw from the case. He asked Gravitter to call Dancy on the phone, but they find that Mrs. Dancy has come to see them. They call her up. She says that her husband has been taken out for the night by Colford. She says she does not know where they have gone. Tuesday tells her that he would like to see him before the court sits the next day. Mabel's condition is pitiable. She says, "Oh, Mr. Tuesday, when will it be over? My head is getting awful sitting in that court." Tuesday does not tell her anything, but only tells her that there was no need for her to go to the court the next day. She is asked to go home and take rest and nurse her head after she leaves. Gravitter asks Tuesday whether her condition had shaken him. Tuesday is not shaken at all. Professional loyalties comes before all other feelings with him. He wants to go and meet Sir Frederick just then, but he is told that the council had gone to Brington for the night. He thereupon gets his address and decides to go and meet him there. Gravitter feels bad about the whole thing, but the old man was inflexible with him. In professional honor comes first. Scene second, the following morning, Dancy comes to meet Twisden at 10:25. Before Twisden comes to the room, Dancy asks the young clerk whether he had been in the war. The clerk says yes. Then Dancy asks him how he had tolerated the boring life in an office. The clerk leaves peace and found the excitement of the army difficult to endure. Dancy says that if he has to leave this dull life, he would become mad. He has taken to the waiting room. When Twisden came to his room, he found a note from Gravitor saying that he had checked up from found Ricardo's statement correct. Twisden had been to Sir Frederick. The latter agreed with him completely and had decided to give up the case. Twisden puts the two notes on the table and covers them up with the blotting sheet. Then he calls Dancy. Dancy has no idea why he has been called. He is waiting to go to the court. Twisden asks him not to go to the court and tells him that he has very serious news for him. He uncovers the two notes and says that a man called Ricardo come to see them after the court rose the previous day. Then he asks Dancy, is there any need for me to say anything more? Dancy understands that the whole thing is out and says no. Twisden says that in these circumstances the duty of an advocate is clear. He and Sir Frederick have decided to withdraw from the case. He warns Dancy that a warrant may be issued for his arrest any time. The question now is what Dancy should go to save himself from criminal proceedings. Twisden presumes that Dancy stole the notes in a moment of reckless bravado, perhaps out of a feeling that as he had given the mirror to Delevis, the money was as much his as that of the Jew. He must have done it to satisfy a debt of honor to Ricardo's daughter and to save his wife from hearing of it from Ricardo's. No doubt it was mad of Dancy to have done all that. He strongly advises him to leave the country at once, as arrest was possible any moment. But Dancy is thinking of what would happen to his wife. Twisden suggests that Dancy should take the first train, which will take him to a port from where he can go to France. He has got his passport and some money. From France, he can slip over the border to Spain and get a job as a soldier. He advises him to go at once and leave him to break the news to his wife. Dancy thanks him, but wants to decide what to do after thinking for a few minutes. He is asked to go to another room and decide his course of action. Canning and Gravitor now comes to Twisden's room. The Gravitor informs Twisden that as soon as the court met, Sir Frederick got up and said that he was withdrawing from the case. Gravitor come away at once, but he was sure that a judgment would soon be given against Dancy, and he will also be asked to pay the cost of the suit to Delevis. Canning praises Delevis for his swiftness, because immediately after the theft he had suspected the right person. Colford and Margaret now come in. Colford is very angry with their lawyers because they have suddenly withdrawn from the case. They are not playing the game. Whatever the client might have done, the lawyer must remain loyal to him. But Twisden explains that he had to sacrifice his duty to his client for the sake of a higher duty to his professional etiquette. Colford is a true friend to Dancy, and so he remains unconvinced by Twisden's argument, but he is helpless. Whatever happens, he will stand by his friends. Margaret offers her jewels to pay Delevis and save Dancy, but she does not realize that money cannot save Dancy from prosecution for theft. Twisden says that he has advised Dancy to go to Spain and take up a job there. General Canning writes a letter to a friend of his in the Spanish War Office who can help Dancy to get a job. They all sympathize with Dancy and his poor wife. Dancy appears suddenly and tells them rather suddenly that he will not tolerate any pity for him. He cannot stand commiseration. He wants all of them to leave the place. Margaret, Gravitor and Colfer now leave. Dancy tells Twisden that that he would go home first and tell his wife everything. The general gives him the letter of introduction. He thanks the general but does not know another now whether he will be able to make use of it. Delevis now suddenly appears there. He has come only to warn them that a warrant is to be issued for Dancy's arrest. He has overheard this. He wants to tell them that it is not his doing. He does not want even his money back, and he does not want the cost either. The money may be given to some charity. He has been proved right, and that is enough for him. He says, "Don't mistake me. I did not come because I feel Christian. I am a Jew." He faces Dancy, who looks at him with nothing alive in his face but his eyes. The two stand looking at each other. Delevis waits for a sign from Dancy but does not say anything. Then Delevis shrugs his shoulders and walks out. The brief, wordless encounter between Dancy and Delevis is an arresting and dramatic scene. When Delevis has gone, Dancy is aroused as from a dream. Canning reminds him that he has no time to lose. Slowly, like a man in dream, Dancy walks across the room and goes out. Scene third. The last scene is Dancy's sitting room in the most harrowing one in the play. Mabel is seen sitting alone on the sofa reading the newspaper, which have given detailed accounts of her husband's case. She is feeling very weak and has a bottle of smelling salts in her hand. The door opens and Dancy comes in. Mabel is greatly surprised. She wants to know whether they want her presence in the court. Dancy tells her that the case has collapsed. They have found out the real thief through those notes. Mabel, in her innocence, asks whom they have found out. Dancy bluntly tells her, "Me." Mabel is horrified. He blames her for not agreeing to go to Africa 3 months back. Mabel says, "Why did not you tell me then?" "I would have gone." His reply was that she wanted that case and now would have gone. She wanted that case and it had collapsed. Dancy kneels down and asks for her forgiveness. She tells him that she somehow knew that she was guilty, and yet she loved him as if nothing had happened. She wanted to know why he did it. He replied that it was a crazy thing to do, but he felt that he was only looting a looter. The money was as much mine as his. A decent chap would have offered me half. But Delevis looked at him as much as to say, "You blasted fool." The jump from one balcony to another was really thrilling, and he needed the money because he had promised to pay Ricardo's daughter £1,000. That morning he had a letter from her father threatening to tell Mabel everything unless the money was paid immediately. Then Delevis made fun of him for his parlor tricks, so he decided to rob him. He felt that it had done one good. It had cured Mabel of her love for him. He nobly confessed that he is unworthy of her. He tells her that he may soon be arrested, prosecuted, and sent to prison, and so he had been advised to run to Morocco. Dancy says this will be good by then. Mabel, however, is determined to be loyal to him unto death. She says, no, I will follow. I will come out to you there. In case imprisonment is inevitable, she assures him that she will wait for his return. Whatever happens, she will remain loyal to him. While Mabel is placing everlasting loyalty to her husband, the engines of doom are on the move. The bell rings. Mabel looks through the slit of the letterbox and finds that the police has come. She assures her husband that whatever happens, she will go on loving him. "If it is prison, I will wait. I don't care what you did. I am just the same." When Nancy says that Not in human nature, she replies, it is in me. The police keep on knocking and are about to break the door open. Dancy goes into the bedroom. His face did not show any feeling up till now. Now it seems that he has become mad. He locks up the door from inside. Mabel now opens the outer door. Inspector Deed and the young constable come in. They ask her if her husband is in the house. She detains the inspector in conversation as long as possible so that Dancy might be able to escape. Her statement that she was not sure whether her husband is in the house is naturally not believed by the inspector. He now tells her plainly that he has come to arrest him. Then she makes a pathetic appeal to him for a time. They had been married only 4 months. She appeals to him to go away and come back within half an hour. Her pathetic appeal would have moved even a story heart, but the inspector has loyalty to his own profession. He has to perform his duty, however painfully it might be. Sentiments cannot prevent him from performing his duty. He sympathizes with Mabel but proceeds to search Dancy in the house. Margaret and Colford come to the house but are detained at the door by the constable. Dancy says, "From within, you can come in now." They hear the lock being opened. Then there is a pistol shot. Mabel rushes into the bedroom, followed by the inspector, Margaret, and Colford. They find that Dancy has shot himself. Colford and Margaret reappear, supporting Mabel, who faints as they lay her on the sofa. Colford takes from her hand an envelope, which is addressed to him. In his farewell message, Dancy said that he was doing the only decent thing that he could go. It's only another jump. A pistol keeps Faith. Look after her, Colford. Colford unnecessarily blames the inspector for Dancy's death. Colford calls it her harakiri, or a noble sacrifice made by him to save his honor and that of his wife. Colford goes inside and finds that the shot has gone straight through the heart. Margaret refers to Dancy's statement that a pistol keeps faith, a pistol does not fail in its duty, and she says, "We have all done that. It is not enough. They were all loyal to him, but they could not avoid the tragedy. Colford bids adieu to his dear departed friend by promising to carry out his last wish, namely that he should look after Mabel. Margaret's word contained the essence of the play. She should, of course, be loyal to one's own race or nation or religion or class or profession. This loyalty is necessary for the smooth working of our daily life, but this loyalty should be kept within limits. Loyalty at the cost of justice and morality is no virtue at all and may have tragic consequences. The friends of Dancy, who knew that he was guilty, should have persuaded him to confess the guilty and return the money to the Jew. If they had done that, everything would have been all right. That would have been true friendship. But these people had blind loyalty for him, and they supported and encouraged him, and so they have to be held responsible for his tragic end. Thank you. This is the end of summary of loyalties.